It's like, well, how can I tell this story in 3 or 4 minutes? Whereas a screenplay, it's like, how can I keep this story going? Because I could tell it in 30 pages, you know?
Welcome to Story and Craft. Now, here's your host, Mark Preston.
Hey, how are you? It's Mark Preston, and this is Story and Craft. So glad to have you here. If this is your first time, welcome. Going to have some fun here. Glad you can join in. Going to have some great conversation momentarily. And of course, if you are coming back after listening to some previous episodes, thank you. Welcome back. Glad to have you as part of the tribe, as it were. Today is a really cool day. I had a chance to sit down with an Academy Award winner, Golden Globe winner, Billy Bob Thornton. He doesn't need any introduction. I mean, come on now. It's Billy Bob. Of course, I had to introduce my kids to Billy Bob, and I did that by kicking on Friday Night Lights, and that was kind of cool because it just registered with me. I had never seen the movie until I watched it with my kids, and that was... that was kind of odd. How did that movie slip by? I don't know. But of course, he's been in Sling Blade, Bad Santa, The Man Who Wasn't There, The Alamo, Fargo, Goliath, and most recently, the Paramount Plus show. My new favorite show right now is 1883, and my son Zachary and I checked it out. Loving that show, and Billy Bob showed up, did not disappoint, knocked it out of the park. Now, Billy Bob, or of course, Bud, as he likes to be called, is not only a talented actor, we all know that, it's obvious he's a rock star, but he is a genuine rock star. He's an accomplished musician, and back in 2007, Billy connected with J.D. Andrew, and they formed the group The Boxmasters, and this spring, Billy and J.D. will release their latest album, Help, I'm Alive, as well as Hit the Road. They're going to be doing a tour that's going to have them touring all the way into the summer. So if you can, check out the Boxmasters on tour, pick up the new CD or download it. Showing my age. Here we go. This is a great talk. Billy Bob Thornton, J.D. Andrew, we are talking music. How does creating music compare to writing a movie? Of course, Billy Bob knows a thing or two about that, considering he won an Academy Award for doing it. So, hey, by the way, head to storyandcraftpod.com, the website storyandcraftpod.com, and get signed up for the newsletter and kind of stay in the know as to what we got going on here. And of course, you can find all the social media links. As always, just subscribe using your favorite podcast app, whatever it happens to be, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, whatever, and leave us a review. That would be very much appreciated. You know, tell your friends, hey, I just listened to this really odd cat named Mark Preston. He's got this show, Story and Craft. Kick it up on your podcast app there, listen in. I appreciate the good word. All right, now, let's not waste any more time. I want to get right into it. Having some fun. Billy Bob Thornton, J.D. Andrew, they are the Boxmasters. It's Boxmasters Day, right here on Story and Craft. First out of the gate, congratulations, new album coming out. Always kind of exciting, and y'all have a case of the nerves whenever a record's about to roll out, or... y'all, after doing this so long, you're just like, all right, it's cool.
Well, we're always hopeful.
And it's not, you know, we're not nervous because, you know, we made it and we like it. So, you know, we're just happy that, you know, we've got the copies. I'm more nervous about actually getting the physical copies, you know, in hand, because sometimes, or like during the pandemic, we were, you know, setting up another record and, you know, there was one of the lacquer places in Japan burned down, and you know, there was all of a sudden it was like hard to get a vinyl pressed, and you know, I'd call all these places and they'd be like, it's 14 months to get a record pressed. It's like, goodness.
With the pandemic, how did y'all be it recording, or you know, what did it, was it like logistically difficult for you at all?
Well, it was actually pretty easy. I mean, once the studios opened back up, we record over it Henson, which is the old A&M studios, until now we have our own, but we actually made 3 records during the lockdown, so it was, you know, we were pretty productive. Touring obviously was a challenge, we went
or
on
non-existent.
Tour, or non-existent for a long time. And we went out last year. We had 43 shows. We got through 21 of them, and then we got shut down. So we're looking forward to going out this year because we're going to do makeup shows for a lot of those dates that we missed last year. But in terms of recording, once the studio opened back up, we did pretty well.
Now, do you record out of your studio or like your own personal studio, or do you like to actually go into a session studio to record?
Well, we've done both. I had a studio back in the, I think 99 through like 2013 or 14 and
12.
I don't remember dates that well. And so, after that, we recorded at Henson for years, and now, just recently, last May, we got our own studio, which is called Pepper Tree Hill Studios, and it's outside of L.A., and that's where we are right now, and we're actually working on a new record before we go on tour, so we start rehearsals for the tour on the 30th, and we're trying to get this record finished up before we go.
Well, did you step into a studio space that was already put together, or did you kind of just get a space and kind of build it out the way you wanted it to?
Well, it was already a studio, and it's not like a, like if you saw it, it's not like a home studio. I mean, it's a separate building from the house. Like the house is up on a hill, and then down the hill is this studio building, and it's 2,200 square feet.
Really?
So it's a real life.
No, no. This is a righteous, you know, recording studio. And the great thing is that when we came into it, it was completely empty. I mean, it had been remodeled and completely redone by the previous owner. And, you know, they did an amazing job at making it a beautiful place. Mm-hmm. And so all we had to do was move in our stuff. And we've got a lot of stuff.
So, now, for you, JD, since you came from engineering, do you prefer, I mean, obviously you enjoy performing, but do you like to actually do the editing or do you like to be performing? Or is it kind of a equal thing for you?
It's kind of all the same thing for me. I mean, you know, I just intended on being a recording engineer. And, you know, until Billy said, hey, how well do you play guitar one day when we were, you know, finishing up his fourth solo record. And so, you know, one of the things is, you know, we've had other engineers, you know, help us out, but at the same time, it's like, you know, I'm kind of a control freak and I just, you know, it's like, we know how we want things to sound. And
right.
So it's like, the cool thing is that we can make things sound how we want, and we don't have to relay it to another person.
Yeah, with the nature of the music, it's got a very distinctive sound. And I have to say, I've heard some things here and there, but I kind of introduced myself to a lot more of your library. And I dig it. And the DNA of it is very, it's 50s, 60s, I think the British invasion type of thing. What was the impetus for that? How did, Billy Bob, how did y'all come together with that being the sound, you know, no longer doing solo, you're actually going to be a band. How did you come up with that idea of being, this is going to be the sound of my band?
Well, initially it started with a sort of experimental thing we were doing where JD and I were just talking, and the first song we cut when we decided to have a band out of this, because JD and I were working in the studio on the solo record of mine, and he was engineering, and when we decided to record some stuff together, the first song we actually recorded when we said, okay, this is real, once we started playing around, was a Chad and Jeremy song called Yesterday's Gone. And we thought, you know what? What if we married hillbilly music and the British invasion? And so the first two records, well, including a Christmas record, the first three, they don't really sound like we sound. Now, I mean, now we just sound like a band is influenced by the Birds and the Beatles and people, but Kinks and people like that. But once we got through those couple of records, we started to just play like we play and write like we write. But, you know, the band was really formed out of that sort of idea of, you know, what if we take all of our influences and put them into one thing. And we both, you know, like sort of old time sort of hillbilly music, and but we're both freaks over the British Invasion.
Well, now, when you were coming up, was that when you were younger? Was that the thing you were listening to? Was that the inspiration for you when you were a kid?
Sure, absolutely. No, I mean, just like everybody my age, you know, when we saw the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, that was it. I mean, you know, that's the thing. So, you know, I was a fan of the Beatles and the Kinks and the Animals and, you know, people like that, Dave Clark Five. And I was, you know, obsessed with all that stuff and, you know, the fan magazines and the whole deal. And so, yeah, I mean, that's mainly where my musical influences came from, as well as the Southern California pop rock music of the 60s and the Memphis sound.
Yeah, I kind of picked up on that little DNA bit of the Southern California thing from back in the day. And when I say it's an interesting library, it's kind of unexpected from each track to the next. I'm like, okay, it kind of invites you into the album.
Another thing Billy didn't mention was, you know, he is a huge Zappa fan. And so, you know, between The Mothers of Invention and Frank Zappa, there's that kind of thread weaving through all this pop music. So there'll be a little element of bizarro-ness or, you know, or like, there'll be some Beefheart-ness, you know, or something, you know, that'll just be just something that twists things just a hair, you know? So it's it's not something that you really, you know, notice without, you know, really digging into it. But, you know, there's that. And, you know, then there's also the Southern rock stuff, you know, the Allman Brothers and whatnot that, you know, it's not as prevalent, but there's still that, you know, all of these influences mixed together, you know, the British Invasion, Southern rock, the Beach Boys, you know, it's all these things together. That's, you know, that's the stuff that we listen to that, you know, comes out when we play a song or when we write a song.
It's really curious for me, especially there's two of y'all. Is there like a division of, okay, I'm going to be doing the writing, I'm going to be doing working on the music, or do y'all just kind of bounce back and forth on who's writing and who's doing the tune? And kind of a two-part question is, what comes first for y'all, kind of chicken or the egg? Is it a lyric that pops in your mind, or is it kind of a lick on the guitar that kind of inspires you to take off into a song?
Well, it happens all those ways. You know, it's never, you know, sometimes it's a lick. Sometimes it's a melody with a few lines. Sometimes one of us has a verse, and then we try to come up with a bridge and a chorus. So it happens all kind of different ways. And the ones that come out, we usually know pretty instantly if this is going to be a song for us or not. And, you know, we usually agree on everything. So, you know, it's... And, you know, we generally will... you know, give in to the other one if we think it's a better idea. It's like we want the best idea, you know. So if somebody has a better idea, the other one usually says, yeah, you're right, we should do that. And, but songs come, you know, a lot of time, I would say more often than not, we have a melody and a few words for either a chorus or a verse or something, and that's how they usually start.
What is a parallel for you, storytelling, screenplay to writing a song? What are the similarities and what are the distinct differences between the two of those things?
Well, one of the main differences is that with a screenplay, you have, 90-something to 120-something pages to develop everything. So, you know, oftentimes with a screenplay, you have to, usually you have the first act and the last act, and the middle always sags, and that's what you have to work on. So, in other words, you have so much time in a screenplay that you're struggling to keep it afloat the whole way. Whereas with a song, you got 3 or 4 minutes that you're trying to tell an entire story in, so you're actually trying to squeeze in everything. You know, it doesn't let up. There's not a lag in it. Instead, you've got too much. It's like, well, how can I tell this story in 3 or 4 minutes? Whereas a screenplay, it's like, how can I keep this story going? Because I could tell it in 30 pages, you know? So those are differences. I mean, you know, music ideally and movies should both have a rhythm to them, you know, obviously music, but movies do too. And that's why good editors are priceless, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, acting should have a rhythm. Writing a screenplay has a rhythm, you know, and so in that way, they're very similar.
I've heard of people saying that they wrote a screenplay, yeah, over a weekend, it just cranked it out. Other people fuss over it for months and months. Now, between the two of y'all, when it comes to writing songs, is it something, do y'all suffer from, like, vapor lock, like, I can't think of anything, or do you just have a plethora of stuff just coming out of you all the time?
There's really not, unless we're, you know, if we're on tour, or, you know, there's something really going on, you know, that's taking our attention, you know, there's songwriting, you know, there's, you know, and if a song is hard to like create, then that one gets put away and then something else starts. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't sit around and slave over, you know, a song and you're like, oh, you know, really work and like craft it. You know, it's like, you know, inspiration and, you know, just pure, you know, spur of the moment, like this feels good. Mm-hmm. Let's record this. And so if it's not feeling good and if it's not inspiring us, you know, let's move to the next thing. We got plenty of other stuff. So,
well, how do you like to record as far as, do you like to lay individual tracks, or do you like the kind of the zen of just getting in and doing it live? You're both going at the same time.
No, there's two of us. So, I mean, we've got a process, you know, where, yeah, we'll cut the original, you know, the very basic, you know, scratch guitar. We've started doing scratch piano and vocal. You know, it's like get the arrangement of the song down, you know, like where is this song starting and where is it ending? And then we'll start putting tracks on it. So, you know, it'll be, an acoustic guitar and a vocal. And then we'll start, you know, with drums and bass. And then, you know, as we go, just build it up. But, you know, it's, you know, a really pretty quick process for us, you know, to start a song. From the time it's even, you know, being written and finished being written to, you know, by the end of the night, usually we have pretty much everything we're going to put on.
But y'all been together long enough, y'all probably have a shorthand. Y'all can kind of communicate almost, you know.
That's the thing. We've been recording together since 2006 or 7. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've got, you know, we're kind of old hands at it now. We do have a process, and it's always worked for us. And so we're, you know, fairly efficient machine these days. You know, we just have to have the inspiration, like JD said. I mean, you know, usually if a song doesn't pop out immediately, in our case anyway, there's probably something wrong with it. So we move on. But the recording process itself, I mean, you know, I'm the luckiest band guy in the world because my partner in the band is a world-class recording engineer. So
there's a lot of efficiency built into that process, I'm sure. You know, it's you can think of like the post, what's going to happen, and you can kind of fix it, you know, as you're doing it.
Well, yeah, I mean, we have a thing, JD, is that, you know, we don't have anybody else that we have to convey our vision to. Like the vision is coming from the people who are recording it, so you don't have a bunch of other people in the middle that you have to get to understand what you're trying to get, you know, and when we're not getting it, we know it. And, you know, we can look at each other and go, maybe we need to add this, take that away. You know, we need to recut it, whatever it is, you know, we're pretty in agreement on that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we know ourselves, you know, we know what we're always pushing ourselves, you know, to like, you know, do something better, you know, like, you know, not necessarily fancier, but, you know, like having, you know, a certain sound to the way we play. And, you know, one of the ways, you know, we try to keep, you know, the band sounding live, you know, as a two-piece band who's just stacking things on top is, you know, we'll just hit start, you know, hit record at the top of the song and play it from top to bottom. You know, we're not sitting there, okay, I'm going to play this part of the verse and play until I get this right, and then I'll move on to the chorus. You know, we play it like a song. You know, if as if we were a band in the studio playing live, we just try to do that. It's like, here's the beginning of the song, here's the end. let's play it all the way through. And, you know, if we mess up, then we'll go back. We'll do it another time. You know, so it's, you know, we have the technology to just sit in there and rip things apart. You know,
right.
Like these days, you know, you can just micro edit until you're, you know, blue in the face. But we don't do that because, you know, that's everything that we, you know, don't like about music. We like, you know, dynamics and feeling and looseness and tightness at the same time. You know, it's like all these things that make music feel good. You know,
right.
It's like, it all comes from playing an instrument, you know, and, you know, playing it with feeling and emotion and all that. So,
yeah,
you know,
we're a band with a lead vocalist, a guitar player and a drummer. And we do takes until we get one. And
yeah.
Then you put on, JD puts on the bass and we sing it.
It sounds like a touch of improv y'all have going on a little bit, just kind of sussing it out what it is that y'all want to do. It is such a cool, unique sound y'all have. What is the on-ramp that you're finding that how people discover you? Are they coming from rockabilly, country? Are they coming from kind of a classic rock? The people that discover you, that kind of fall in love with you, the people you're seeing when you're on stage, how are they typically finding you? What's their on-ramp?
I think a lot of it, our fans are people who are fans of the stuff that influenced us, actually. I mean, we have a lot of fans of classic rock and British Invasion. We have some from the Americana world. So I would say anywhere from the sort of indie music, you know, through classic rock and British Invasion, I would say that's most of our fan base.
It seems like a lot of the millennials are kind of discovering some of that music, and it's kind of new to them. I know my kids, you know, they discover some of that same kind of music. They're teenagers, you know, so that's...
The good thing is, I mean, they're tied into the technology aspect of it where, you know, they have every song ever written in the world on their phones.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, if they just get somehow this song pops up, you know, for them and they like that, then they'll go and search out more, and they've got the ways to do that.
Do y'all miss the days of going to record stores and the way it used to be, or do you like the fact that it's all on your phone now?
No,
definitely miss it.
That's why we, as much as we can, do things with indie record stores and just go to them when we're on the road. You know, we'll go and hang out and, you know, check out what they got. But at the same time, you know, we'll be sitting around in the studio going, hey, remember this song by, you know,
the Trogs.
Yeah, you know, remember this, you know, it's like something that's like, you know, a memory for us. And we're like, we want to find this song, you know, there was something interesting in it, you know, like a couple weeks ago, we were listening to Del Shannon's, we were listening to Runaway, and it was like, and then it's like listening to that, and then it's like, what was that sound that was playing the solo in the you know, instrumental section? And being able to look that up and find out it was this one-off instrument called the Musitron that some guy built, you know, and he wrote that song with Dell. And it's, you know, having that, you know, is really valuable. But nothing beats going into a record store and being able to flip through the records and just find all these treasures, you know? It's like that's why we both have boxes of CDs and vinyl just sitting around in corners of our houses. You know, it's like, these are our treasures that we grew up with, you know? And it's like, we can't imagine getting rid of them because they meant so much to us, you know?
Yeah, and I grew up in that era it was just post vinyl and cassette. So I like was deep, like when I was in high school, it was all cassette. And then when CD rolled, I was like, oh, thank God, something better than cassette. And now vinyl's back again, which is like, I think really cool. And because I think what was lost is the whole zen of the album art. You know, I thought that was just the coolest thing. It was part of the collection, not just the music. Now, as far as the album art goes, how much input do y'all have on that? Do y'all have a process that y'all got somebody you like to use? Or I've always been curious, how do bands decide on the album art?
Well, we do have people, obviously, that help us because neither one of us are artists. We can barely write our own names. But we have a guy named Matt Cullen who has, we give him the basic idea. Here's the kind of cover. And we'll give him examples of other album covers, you know, that we've seen that we're trying to get at. And So he's done a few albums with us, and then this latest one, Help I'm Alive, the one that's coming out here April 15th, was done by a friend of ours named Chris Jimenez. We call him Noches, and he's an artist. And we just said, hey, you know, we just took a picture of JD, a picture of me, and said, Chris, could you do like a pencil drawing of this? Because we just want that kind of art on this record. And he did it. So, but we don't work with people at a label and work with designers and stuff like that. We kind of build it ourselves.
Yeah, no, we, you know, we sit there. I've learned enough Photoshop to be able to put together a vinyl package. Mm-hmm. You know, so Chris gave us that picture. And, you know, we stuck it on there and it's like, okay, I typed out the words. It's like, okay, let's find a font that looks all right, you know? And so we do it ourselves, you know, we have to, you know, yeah, we have these other guys that are, you know, doing the heavy lifting part of it, but the, you know, boring part of it, like picking the color, the, you know, everything, it's like, we sit there and it's like, you know, I can't remember what color I had first. And Billy's like, well, why don't you try turquoise? It's like, okay, great. Let's try that. And it's like, okay, that looks cool.
Well, I love the aesthetic of what y'all did. Like, even the logo kind of reminds me of it. It's a callback. It's just kind of cool. You know, it's something I remember. And even the on the previous stuff y'all have done, even the way y'all dressed, it was just kind of cool. It's a cool callback. And I can't think of another adjective besides cool, but definitely.
Just saying, we're not cool, so we just have to, like, use other, you know.
Well, your secret is safe with me. I'm curious, though, now, as a native Texan, I got to ask you, Billy. You know what I always do? Do you go by Billy Bob or Billy?
Either Billy or Bud.
But okay. As a native Texan, I got to know your connection to ZZ Top. Do you mind touching on that for a moment? Because I've always been curious about, because I remember hearing an interview a few years ago and you brought up ZZ Top and my memory faded a little bit, but I wanted you to clarify a little bit on that.
Absolutely. Actually we've opened for them quite a few times and, I've known those guys. I've known Billy for probably 35 years, and I was very close with Dusty, as close to Frank as you can get. they're all great guys. You know, obviously Dusty passed away this last year, and we were pretty devastated. Passed away when we were out.
We were on the road.
It was just really a bad thing all the way around. When I was in 1979 or 80, somewhere back in there, I was born in Hot Springs, Arkansas, so I was very close to Texas and then moved to Houston after high school. So I lived in a suburb of Houston called Tomball, and, you know, they're a Houston band, even though Dusty and Billy came, Dusty and Frank came from Dallas, but guy who worked with ZZ Top's company who saw us playing at a club in Houston called Cardi's. And he came backstage afterward. We were in a three-piece band and we sounded, you know, a lot like ZZ Top. We even did a couple of songs. And I was playing drums then. And he said, hey guys, how'd you like to be a ZZ Top tribute act? And we said, well, what does that mean? Because they didn't have tribute acts back then.
Yeah. Really.
Maybe a couple, but, you know, it wasn't a thing like it is now. Now there's one for every band. But anyway, there's like the Jonathan Edwards tribute act. But anyway, so we said, well, sure, what's in it for us? What do we do? He said, well, you dress like ZZ Top, you play their songs, and I book you, and you go out and do it. And we said, well, what do we get out of this? And he says, what are you making tonight? We said, I don't know, $300. He said, how'd you like to make $1,500? And we said, we'd like that very much. And, for a couple of years, we did that. And Billy actually came to see us somewhere. Some friend of his said, hey, if you want to see how to play your songs live, go watch these guys. And but I didn't really get to know him then. And I started hanging out with Billy in the early 90s. And then, you know, met Dusty and Frank, you know, through Billy. And we've just had a great friendship ever since. And I've actually ridden on the bus with those guys to shows before and hung out and stayed at their houses and everything. It's all a big family. And I'm, you know, very close to Pablo, their tour manager. And So it all kind of started back then. You know?
Yeah, yeah, I actually saw, I was at LAX getting my luggage, and I saw Billy once, and I was like, oh, crap, I'm not going to fanboy out, and I'm just going to walk by and just kind of nod, and he looked exactly the way he wanted him to look. You know, he was Billy, you know.
Absolutely.
Now, I do know you got a couple Tomball dates on your tour, and besides, outside of California, you got a number of dates in California, but I noticed y'all really hitting a lot of Texas venues and some cool locations. Was that an active choice? You want to spend a little more time in Texas? Do you have a big following in Texas? Kind of what was the choice there?
Well, we do have a following in Texas, and normally we don't have that many California shows. This is really rare for us to have that many. Normally they're like three or four at the most. For some reason they don't like us in San Francisco, so we don't really play there. But we in Southern California, we're like the Beatles. Texas is, first of all, it's a big state, and there are a lot of places to play there. I mean, you know, if you go through Rhode Island, there's like there's like two venues. But in Texas, you can play, you can do a whole tour in Texas practically. And so, you know,
and they still be like 8 hours away from each city.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. So, you know, just agent-wise, our agent books us a lot in Texas, but we do have connections there and a lot of friends there, and we played there a lot. So we do love to get back to Texas, and that whole area, really, Oklahoma, Texas, you know.
Yeah, I'm from Dallas, so the areas that you're hitting up there, I'm going, damn, it's like, I imprinted it up here. I was sitting there going, it's like, are there any he's not coming to New Orleans. Oh, crap.
Well, we haven't played New Orleans in a while.
Yeah,
you know, we've hit spots around, you know, like Shreveport and Baton Rouge. We had a date on the last tour that we didn't make it to. But, you know, usually the Southeast, you know, is a, you know, good part of the country for us. You know, we usually play quite a few shows in Alabama and Tennessee and just, you know, a little bit in Georgia. You know, it's never been a real strong spot for us, but you know, we keep moving east, you know, from Alabama's like, you know, really a stronghold for us, you know, like Muscle Shoals area.
Oh, that's a legendary area down there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, we, you know, we've done really well. We got a lot of fans in Northern Alabama, and you know, it spreads out from there. But, for some reason, you know, it's, New Orleans has been hard. I mean, it's also, you know, place where, you know, like every year when about the time we get there or going to be there, you know, there's a hurricane.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, they do have hurricane parties down here, but yeah, you want to get on out when you can. What are y'all listening to right now? I mean, I know the influences for Boxmasters, but what right now when you kick on Spotify or put an album on, what are y'all listening to?
Well, it's funny, when we're making a record, we don't listen to much of anybody else's stuff because we're so concentrated on what we're up to. You know, I still pretty much listen to what I've always listened to, but it's pretty eclectic, you know. I mean, I listen to a lot of, you know, Sinatra and Dean Martin also, you know, and, you know, Elvis and the Beatles and Traffic and Cream and the Mothers of Invention. You know, I listen to that because, you know, we got a turntable here in the studio. It's 12 feet from us right now. And, you know, we've got some vinyl in there of the Mothers of Invention and people like that. I listen to a lot of that. And in terms of new stuff, you know, my daughter is 17, so I pretty much listen to what she listens to when I'm in the house or when we're driving. So as a result, I hear a lot of Taylor Swift and you know.
My 16-year-old just discovered, I don't know if she just discovered it, but country music. And it's so funny because she's pretty much a city girl. You know, she's 16. I have a son who's 17, and my daughter, oldest daughter, is 19. And my daughter asked me, she said, Daddy, I'm very serious. She said, did they have country music like back when you were in high school? I was like, oh, bless your heart. You know, so I kicked on. I said, I need to introduce you to what I was listening to. And I was like, I don't want to go too deep just yet. No Willie just yet. I put on Brooks and Dunn, Neon Moon. She starts singing it. I'm like, baby, how do you know this song? And she's like, oh, it's on TikTok. And so that discovery thing is just like, I'm trying to get my head around it. And it's, you know, I came out of the world of radio. And I mean, the discovery now for these kids it's everywhere. It's eclectic, which I think is cool because they can get exposed to things they normally would not. I was curious because I've done a little bit of acting, not a lot, but I've noticed that a lot of downtime in a trailer. Do you use that as just riffing on a guitar when it's theatrical? That's your focus. Where it's music, that's your focus. Or do you use music as kind of the way to pass the time and to keep your mind active creatively?
Not really. I don't do much, songwriting or anything like that in the trailer. I mean, yeah. What keeps me active on the set is what I'm up to in that moment.
Yeah.
I don't really do them at the same time, and in music, I don't, watch movies to pass the time while JD's doing some engineering or something that's boring. I usually stay focused on whatever's in the moment. The only thing that does happen is sometimes when I'm on a set and we've just finished a record or, whatever, and JD has questions about, hey, what were we going to do about this? What do you think about that? I'll talk to him from the set, about something. But not really.
I mean, I've come and set up, the laptop and a pair of speakers in the trailer before, if we're like, all working on a record and, we just need that few little bits just to, finish something off. But it's not, these days, it's like there's breaks and all that. And
you're
so
right.
It's like, sure. We'll find 3 days and go run into the studio or something like that. But, that was the luxury of, when you're shooting in town.
Right.
It's like, but, when Bud leaves town or, the country or whatever, it's, vacation time usually for me.
And I probably spend 3/4 of the, or at least 2/3 of the year on music and about 1/3 in film these days.
Now, the Help I'm Alive, the album, when is that dropping? Is that, I saw it's in April, correct?
April 15th.
April 15th. And the tour kicks off, I think y'all going to be in Ardmore April 7th, Ardmore, Oklahoma, is when that starts off. And y'all going to be spending the summer, or at least first part of the summer touring. Do y'all do a tour bus, or are y'all just flying from location to location?
Oh, we play every single day. I mean, they're not fully finished booking it right now. We've got, 50 shows and...
2.5 months.
Yeah, but it's less than that. It's like, it's 75 days total, including the rehearsal and the driving to the first show. And so that's 6, 7, 8, 9. So it's like 50 shows in 65 days, so we'll have stretches where we're playing 10 nights in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Or, at least 7 nights in a row or 8 nights in a row.
I'm just getting tired even hearing that. I'm getting exhausted hearing about that schedule,
for us, it's like we're not going out to, have a vacation or have fun. We're going out to go work. And, the most fun part is playing a show for people. So it's like sitting around a hotel room or, going bowling, that's, entertaining, but, at the same time, we're out there to work and, we're not doing this all year round. So, we don't have the luxury of, just like playing weekends or something like that.
Yeah.
So we have to make the most of it. And, we ride in a bus and it's all 9 of us and, 10 of us in the bus with a trailer behind it. And, going driving overnight, sleeping in the bus, waking up in a different city and, getting out and putting on a show. So
when I was younger, I always thought that whenever I talked to bands, I was like, God, that sounds like so much fun. But I think the way somebody's 20, 21 probably perceives it a little bit different than now. Yeah, like you said, you're going to work. Yeah, now.
Well, it is fun for the first couple of weeks and the last couple of weeks. And then somewhere in the middle, you get really tired. And but it's, it switches back and forth. Honestly, our mood on the bus is completely influenced by how the show went that night. Like if we had a crummy show, the mood on the bus is crummier. what I mean?
It's kind of almost like athletic. It's like almost like a football team driving back in high school back from a game, you know. The vibe on the bus definitely is predicated upon how they played, you know.
Oh, no doubt about it. And you know, fortunately for us on our tours, you know, probably 90% of the shows are amazing. We have fun and it's good and the crowds are great. You just run into one every now and then, you know, that's kind of like, it looks like the promoter didn't do a lot of work on this.
Well, hell, you know, in baseball, if you get on base half the time, you're in the Hall of Fame, you know. So, and by the way, I don't know where this came. I do seem to remember you're a Cardinals fan, right? So you must be really happy that whatever kind of mischief was going on with the MLB, they're actually going to be playing. So you got to be happy now.
Yeah, thank goodness they settled all that.
Yeah, that would have been a really lame spring if we didn't have, you know, if we're on tour and there's no baseball. You know, it's like there's really no point in touring because that's how we pass our days. I mean, it's, you know, we get off, you know, before the show we're watching baseball, after the show we're watching baseball games or highlights or, you know, whatever. So it's that's really what kind of, you know, gets us through all, you know, life is watching baseball.
So. Well, that and the LPGA and the PGA. We watch golf too.
But all right, gentlemen, I appreciate your time, and I always like to wrap up. Whenever I chat with somebody, it's something I call the Preston's Lucky Seven. I just like to throw out a couple questions. It's just a fun thing. First question, Billy Bob will send this your way. What is your favorite, that comfort food, that thing? It's like it just brings you right back home. It's just the thing you're going to have on the bus, you know, that thing you just need.
I know, JD's laughing because I eat like a bird. I eat nuts and berries and seeds. I'm mostly vegan, but I do occasionally eat fish. But in terms of comfort food that if I could have it, and you know, these days vegan restaurants have gotten really good, so you can actually find it, and there's one close to us where I can have it. But the two things that I would always absolutely have are macaroni and cheese and fried okra.
Fried okra. You hit a home run. Yeah, that's my... touching on my Texas heart right there. I found my daughter today at lunch. She saw it on her calendar. It's like, oh, we got fried okra today. And JD, now, who are three people, if you could sit down and have a cup of coffee, anybody, who would you like to sit down with and have conversation?
Three people.
His wife. Let's see.
Well, yeah. George Harrison's always a, you know, intriguing guy to me. Mickey Mantle was one of my favorite, baseball players, you know, that I never saw when I was a lot or when he, you know, growing up, he was retired by the time I, you know, knew who he was.
Yeah. And don't mean to catch up. My father always used to go to a bar in Dallas and always used to see him. And I've got a box in my studio here of a ton of autographed Mickey Mantle stuff. And I'm like, so need to get it. I need to get it framed, you know, but I'm like, just ton of stuff. That and B.B. King, you know, I was moving and I saw this box. I'm like, what's in here? I'm like, holy shit, I need to get this stuff framed. but who are the other? So besides your wife and Mickey Mantle?
Mickey Mantle, George Harrison, and, you know, let's, for a historical person, like a Benjamin Franklin, somebody historical, you know, somebody that's really, really was there at the dawn of our country.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have a little reminder these days, you know.
Yeah, exactly. What were you guys really thinking about when you were making this up?
And let me tell you what's been happening in the last couple hundred years. now, Billy Bob, who was your, when you were a kid, who was your celebrity crush?
My celebrity crush? Well, as a young kid, it was Suzanne Plachette and Ava Gardner. And when I got a little older, it was Betty Page.
You know, that fits. That fits with the Boxmaster's vibe right there. I kind of think, you know, that's, I see a theme developing. And JD, now it's going to be a Sophie's Choice thing for you already, I can tell. But if you're going to be on an island 1 year, you can bring one DVD and one album with you. What are those two things going to be for 1 year?
Wow. One DVD. It's not that hard. Hoosiers is my favorite movie of all time, and I can watch it every single time it's on and just put it on repeat. For album, man. Let's just go with, you know, I'd want something fun that I'm only, you know, since I can only listen to the one record. So let's do like Endless Summer by the Beach Boys.
Very nice. Very nice.
You know, something that'll, you know, give me a good mood.
Well, there will be margaritas at this on this island. Just, you know, there will be a margarita machine, so that'll work perfectly.
That'd be great, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Now, Billy That's Bob, great. if you were to, like, from the time you get up, how would you define a perfect day for you, stem to stern? What would be that day? What would be going on for you?
When the blueberries are ripe for breakfast, and we didn't forget to order almond creamer for the coffee. Then having lunch with my daughter, coming down to the studio, down the hill to the studio, and recording with JD until about midnight. And going to bed and doing the same thing over again. I like recording and hanging out with family, essentially.
I'm very much the same way. It's about family for me. This is a side question. How did you navigate the with your little one there? She's in high school with the pandemic. Did that go relatively smoothly for you, or was?
Well, she's always been homeschooled, so it didn't really change anything for her. So our schedule was really pretty much the same during the lockdown as it was normally. Like I said, we don't go many places. My wife goes out more than my daughter and I. You know, she goes to the store and, you know, shops and stuff like that. But we pretty much stay at home. And we have a lot, you know, our friends and family coming over to the house a lot. So most of our social events are here.
I think we're cut from the same cloth. And I kind of like, I like my space and people come over. I'll entertain. I like it like that. But real quick, JD, now if... besides being the rock star you are, an engineer, if you weren't doing this, what would you be doing for a living?
I've never had another, I never really had a fallback. You know, I kind of...
Well, isn't that how you know you're doing the right thing? Right there, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I had the choice. It's like going to college. It was like, do I go to college for music or do I go to college to play baseball? So I chose music and... And then initially it wasn't to make records, but at some point I had the epiphany, you know, sort of thing. It's like, I want to make records, mm-hmm. you know, that's what I want to do. And so then I kind of went on the path of like, okay, how do I make records? And so I got myself into that place. And I never had another, you know, like I'm supposed to do something else kind of plan. It was always, you know, like get into the music business, get into this recording studios. You know, I'd kind of not anticipated making music, you know, as a musician, but I, you know, now that, you know, that's what I do, it's, you know, kind of what I guess always kind of.
Actually acting, I keep hearing people say throughout my life, like, if you can't imagine doing something else, that's how you know you're doing the right thing. But last question, Billy Bob, you got the DeLorean, you're cruising back to when you're 16. What is that piece of advice you're going to drop to yourself that you're like, I need to know this at that age? You're going to put me on a right track.
Put your hair in your bank.
Exactly.
A piece of advice that I wish I had.
Yeah, if you can go back in time to say, I wish I, you know, if I can go back in time, I'm going to tell 16-year-old me this thing.
I would say, just remember, whim is a bad word.
Whim is a bad word. Gentlemen, again, thank you so much. It means a lot to me. It's a pleasure to meet both y'all virtually. Been doing that a lot the last couple of years. But thank you again, and y'all have an absolutely killer tour, okay? And best of luck on the new album, of course. Okay, that was cool. I ain't gonna lie. It was very cool. Billy Bob Thornton, JD Andrew, the Boxmasters. What a real pleasure it was to have those two guys on. Glad you had a chance to check it out. I'm glad to have you as well, as always. And great interviews coming. Going to have a great director on soon, one of my favorite directors. Going to be coming up shortly. And, you know, just going to be talking with cool people. That's the only real criteria I've got. Are you cool? All right, come on my show.
And don't forget storyandcraftpod.com, the website, storyandcraftpod.com. That is how you find out all the social media links, get signed up for the newsletter. And again, you can listen on your favorite podcast app, be it Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, whatever. Just sign up, just drop a review, subscribe, whatever. Just come on back. We'll be having some fun right here. All right, that's it for this week. Thank you. Again, I appreciate you making the journey over to Story and Craft to listen in. Great interviews, they're coming. Once again, I'm Mark Preston, and I will talk to you next week right here on Story and Craft.
That's it for this episode of Story and Craft. Join Mark next week for more conversation right here on Story and Craft. Story and Craft is a presentation of Mark Preston Productions, LLC. Executive producer is Mark Preston. Associate producer is Zachary Holden. Please rate and review Story and Craft on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. You can subscribe to show updates and stay in the know. Just head to storyandcraftpod.com and sign up for the newsletter. I'm Emma Dillon. See you next time, and remember, keep telling your story. Come on.